verses that we went over yesterday, in beginning with 8. Yes, in text 8, Narada Muni began his instructions to Vyasadeva. The instructions to Vyasadeva were explaining to Vyasadeva, in answer to his own question, what was the cause of Srila Vyasadeva's despondency. Despite having put together, compiled, and even written such a vast amount of Vedic literature, still Srila Vyasadeva did not feel satisfied. Because even the Bhagavad Gita says, without peace there cannot be happiness. And how can one be peaceful if one is not satisfied? That's basically the definition of peace, when one is satisfied with what one has and with what one has done. So Vyasadeva approached Narada Muni, or rather, by the mercy of Narada Muni, he just came, he appeared on that very spot in the cottage of Vyasadeva by the river Saraswati. And then Narada began his reply to Vyasadeva's question. And in text 8, he explained that you've described so much philosophy, O great sage Srila Vyasadeva. You've described so much philosophy, but it is inferior because the philosophy that you have described does not glorify the Lord. It is therefore inferior. Then in text 9, he continued to say that yes, you have very broadly broadcast the four principles beginning with religious performances, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. You have neglected to glorify on any way at equal level the direct glories of the Lord. So you have glorified so many things. Yes, you have glorified the Lord, but it is just in a minute amount compared to what else you have glorified. That minute amount is basically the Bhagavad Gita. In the midst of 700 verses, in the midst of literally hundreds and thousands of other verses. So the balance was not at all proper. You're not feeling dissatisfied. And after all, in text 10, even if a work of art, of writing, is full of so much glory in the ability to write, so much metaphor, alliteration, etc., if it is written in such an artistic way, if it does not glorify the Lord, actually speaking, it is useless. So he's criticizing, Narada is criticizing all the writing, well done as it is, that Vyasadeva has compiled. And then in text 11, to contrast the very sweet and poetic works of the mundanas, which are considered useless, on the other hand, if something, some work, literary work, glorifies Krishna, if it's transcendentally situated, and it is not ornamented with the beautiful flavorings of expert poetic works, if it is, even if it is full of flaws, because it is glorification of Krishna, it is wonderful, it is transcendental. And then in text 12, the verse we'll begin today, he continues in 12 and 13. Narada continues basically the same point, and he'll conclude in 13. So he says in text 12, which is very famous, especially the first line, Naiskamyam apichuta bhava varjitam na shobate gyanamalam naranjanam kuta puna shashvara badrameshvare na charpitam kamayarapya karanam. Knowledge of self-realization. So he's, so far, he's criticized that work which is beautiful and poetic, but doesn't describe the Lord. It is mundane and doesn't describe the Lord, is considered useless. But here he's saying knowledge of self-realization, knowledge of Brahman, even though freed from all material affinity, even if it has nothing to do, it is uncontaminated by anything material, it does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible, the Lord. So mundane literature has been criticized, and now even transcendental literature is being criticized by Narada Muni. Transcendental literature that does not include direct glorification of the personality of Godhead. In other words, that work that describes simply the impersonal is also considered, it does not look well, in Narada Muni's words. So if something transcendental but lacking the glorification of Krishna is insufficient, then Srila Vyasa Narada Muni continues, what then is the use of fruitive activities? So if transcendental literature that doesn't glorify Krishna is useless, then what to speak of mundane glorification of fruitive activity? And then he describes the qualities of fruitive activity, that they are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature. So that is the quality of fruitive activities. From the very beginning they are painful. Why is a fruitive activity painful from the beginning? Because one is working hard and one is not getting pleasure from the work that one is doing. One is hoping that the fruit will come and his pleasure will be situated in the fruit that he receives. So one works like a donkey. Mudha. This is the example in the Bhagavad Gita given. The Mudha. He is working so hard. Mudha means donkey, an ass. Like the washerman in India, you see this in Vrindavan. The washerman, he has a donkey and he puts all the clothes on the donkey. And the donkey has to carry this little donkey, or sometimes you see them carrying such heavy bricks on both sides. And they're struggling so hard and carrying that and working so hard. And at the end of the day, they get a little grass to eat. So that is the pleasure of the fruit of worker. Such hard work and just a little something to eat at night. Hoping that in the future, the results of my work will bring me some pleasure. So very painful from the very beginning, and not only that, the pleasure is transient. It comes and it goes. Ajantavantakanteya. But yet, as this verse continues to say, because it's condemning this Brahman knowledge that doesn't glorify Krishna, then it condemns fruit of activities. What to speak of? That means that fruit of activities are even more condemned. But those fruit of activities are glorified by saying that they're condemned if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord. That is called, when the fruit of activities are used in Krishna's service, that is called karma yoga. When we use the work we are doing, We may be working aside right next to a materialist, and superficially the materialist is doing one thing and a person who is engaged in karma yoga is doing the exact same thing, but the mentality is completely different, because the devotee engaged in karma yoga will use the fruit of his work and even the work itself to please Krishna. Then it becomes glorious and it will bring one very close to Krishna. So therefore Narada Muni continues in his criticism of Srila Vyasadeva by saying, even I've already criticized you for your compilation of fruit of scriptures, Karmakandya scriptures, and now I am criticizing you for glorifying this Brahman realization. And I'm criticizing you because even though it is pure, free from material consideration, it does not glorify Krishna directly. And then, in the next text, he gives the conclusion or the solution, more or less, of this section by saying that, O Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. So he's going to glorify Vyasadeva. Your good fame is spotless. So your vision, fame, you are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. All these qualities are exalted, actually. And thus, because you are exalted by nature, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance. And this Srila Vyasadeva will do, and we'll hear about this in the beginning of the seventh chapter, where Srila Vyasadeva, Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyag Pranihite Amalam, he will actually sit down in pure focused bhakti and focus his consciousness on the absolute truth, and apashyam pona purusham maya chatad apashrayam, and then yaya jiva samohitam. So he will see the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in trance later on. He'll see the Krishna's maya shakti, which is completely under his control, the control of the Lord. And he'll also see the jiva, who is under the bewildering potency of maya. He'll see all this in his trance. And then, chakre satvita samita, because lokasya janato vidvam, the people in general don't know how to get out of the material world. So after this trance, Srila Vyasadeva is going to write the Bhagavatam, which will give the key, or as will be described later, practically the medicine in doses, in scheduled doses. It will give the medicine that people in general can get out of this bondage of the material world, which means death. So he says, you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Because the people don't know. People simply don't know that they are being bound and being led in line to the slaughterhouse to have their heads chopped off. People don't want to think about this. They want to enjoy their last meal in peace while they are next in line to get their head chopped off. When someone dies, everyone is shocked. A famous person dies. Oh, how is that possible? He's died, but how is that possible? Where next? If not very next, the next after the next. Or if not the next after the next, it's coming quite soon. People don't know this. Lokasya ajanato. People don't know this. They forget. They don't want to see. Prabhupada explains in the last part of his purport, describing the glories of Srila Vyasadeva, his qualifications, because those qualifications of Srila Vyasadeva allow him to actually meditate upon the Lord purely in trance, because unless one's qualified, one doesn't have the ability to focus his consciousness upon Krishna. So Prabhupada says, only to such devotees do the pastimes of the Lord and their transcendental nature become automatically manifest by dint of devotional service. Sometimes Prabhupada uses that term, automatic. So it automatically happens. But it automatically happens if one is pure and qualified by dint, and if one engages in pure devotional service, that's when it automatically happens. No one else, unless one is qualified and engaging in pure devotional service. No one else can either know or describe the acts of the Lord, even if they speculate on the subject for many, many years. The descriptions, of the Bhagavatam are so precise and accurate that whatever has been predicted in this great literature about 5,000 years ago is now exactly acting. So this is the glorification of the Bhagavatam. Prior to that, Prabhupada explains, there are thousands and thousands of literary men all over the world. And they have created many, many thousands of literary works for the information of the people in general for thousands and thousands of years. Unfortunately, none of them, none of those literary works have brought peace and tranquility on the earth. This is due to a spiritual vacuum in those literatures. Therefore, the Vedic literatures, especially the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, are especially recommended to suffering humanity to bring about the desired effect of liberation from the pangs of material civilization, which is eating the vital part of human energy. So, here, Srila Vyasadeva has been criticized by Narada Muni, but he's also been given an instruction by Narada Muni to meditate upon the glories of the Lord and realize those glories and then help the people of this world by presenting the Bhagavatam so that the people can become freed. So he continues now speaking of the chastisement and the cure. And what is that chastisement and the cure? It's going to be that he first is going to be chastised for what he's done already, or the flaw in the Vedic literature that has been presented, even though in one sense it is perfect, but it is flawed in another sense. And the pure alternative, the actual prescription for the benefit of the people is going to be given, and that has already been said, and that is that the Lord's pastimes have to be described so this medicine will go in the ear and the heart of the living entities, because that will attract them away from the world of matter rather than entangle them with it. And that's specifically what the criticism of Narada, that Narada is going to give to Vyasadeva, and it's very, very strong. Oh Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow, we just read that, and situated in truthfulness. Thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord in trance for the liberation of the people in general from material bondage. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. So when, because the Vedic literatures, they talk about going to this heavenly planet and going to that heavenly planet and enjoying this delight and being in this wonderful garden and defeating one's enemies in this way and getting this health and getting this wealth and increasing one's position and fame and prestige and progeny and family members and beautiful this and glorious that. And when one hears about these things, because they are not connected to Krishna, they simply react, the mind reacts and tries to grab these type of forms, names, and results. And then the mind gets carried away, just like a boat gets that is unanchored and unsheltered gets carried away by the wind. Just leave a boat in any river or any lake or any ocean on a windy day, and it will be carried so far. So similarly, this is the fault that Narada is directly putting upon the Vedic literatures that Vyasadeva has compiled, because they are not, because there are so many things that have been described as good and favorable, but these things have not been directly connected to Krishna, and therefore they are not anchored in the absolute truth, and therefore people's minds get driven away by these wonderful descriptions. And therefore, rather than getting out of material bondage, just the exact opposite happens. People get puzzled about what the spiritual path is. They think that maybe I should worship the demigods, maybe I should engage in karma yoga, maybe I should worship, practice astanga yoga and gain mystic powers, maybe I should become a great renunciant and practice jnana yoga. People get lost, they become bewildered. And he's saying, this is due to the presentation that you've made. He's saying it's a mistake, basically. And because you've described things separate from Krishna. And this is dangerous. People lose their understanding of what the real path of self-realization is, and they get attracted to other things. And then he goes further and even stronger in the 15th verse. The people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy, and you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. So this is considered even worse, because once people get an idea in their mind that religion is meant for material enjoyment, just try and tell them to become renounced and follow a different type of religion that's no fun, no meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. Impossible, said Lord so-and-so. Who was that? Not Lord Fauntleroy. Who was it? The Marquis of Jutland. Can you make me a Brahmin? One of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers was asked. Yes. What do I have to do? No meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. You still want to be a Brahmin? Impossible. Because these are the pillars of the happiness and the very life of the materialist. And if those pillars are pulled down, what is the use of being alive, they think? So therefore, to encourage people, this is the criticism, in the name of religion, this is religion, to enjoy one's life, is unreasonable, because they are guided by your instructions, Narada says. They will accept such activities in the name of religion, and they will hardly care for prohibitions. They would much prefer an easier form of religion where you just enjoy yourself. You don't have to give anything up. Just enjoy. Enjoy your senses. Do what you like. No restriction, no regulation. Who will, and that's religion, who will take something that has austerity attached to it then? Prabhupada explains in his purport. Because we know why Vyasadeva did this, because there is a gradual process. You do this, you follow the prescriptions, the Vedic prescriptions you want to enjoy. This is the way the Vedas were described, and Vyasadeva compiled them, trying to help the people of Kali Yuga. You want to enjoy, first you accept the authority of the Vedas, gradually you'll become purified by enjoying in these ways that are prescribed in the Vedas. Gradually, gradually, gradually. But there's no direct mention of the goal, there's no direct mention of Krishna's pastimes. It is a compromise. So Prabhupada says, this compromising spirit of Vyasadeva is directly condemned by Narada, who advises him to directly proclaim that the prime necessity of human life is to realize one's eternal relation with the Lord and thus surrender to Him without delay. That was certainly Prabhupada's mood. Give up all this nonsense. Rascal this, rascal that. Chastising this one, that one. They're all nonsense. They're all rascals. Just surrender to Krishna. We have one test to see if someone is a rascal or not. If he has not surrendered to Krishna, he is a rascal. No compromise in that. So surrender to Krishna without delay. A patient suffering from a particular type of malady is almost always inclined to accept eatables which are forbidden to him. The expert physician does not make any compromise with the patient by allowing him to take partially what he should not take at all. So this is the chastisement, the criticism by Narada, the spiritual master of Srila Vyasadeva to Vyasadeva. And now, the problem with that entanglement in the name of religion or not in the name of religion, there's a problem with that because people think they can have the kingdom of God and God is just sort of an extra there at most. When the concept of heaven, people's concept of heaven. What is the religious concept of heaven? Is there even the slightest concept when you go there you'll be serving God 24 hours a day? No, what is the concept? You go there and you'll enjoy in one way or another. And you'll do you have to do a little service to God now, but that'll be done with when you get there. So the principle is simply material enjoyment. Yeah, at least there'll be harps and good music like that and angels and no taxes or something like that. And some religions say that your family will be there. All your families, all your mother and grandmother who has died, you'll see them again. Just simply, your dog will be there, your cat will be there. Really? Everyone will be there. Even the people you don't like, maybe, that's the problem. But and some there will be those beautiful waterfalls and heavenly gardens. And just material concept of what heaven is. No concept of loving, devotional service, because the concept of service is abominable to the materialist. The concept that there is someone, my love of God, is so deep that the pleasure of my heart is to serve Him forever and ever is absent. So what is religion then? One can't even imagine what the religion is. There's not religion, practically. So when people have it in their mind to enjoy themselves as that is religion, then they will not care for the concept of selfless service. So in text 16, the Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual value. So here's the problem. That it is all right that people want to enjoy the material world in one sense. That is their free will. But what is not all right, and the criticism even greater than giving them material activities that agitate their mind, but this criticism that you cannot actually understand spiritual values if you are engaged, if you are not retired from the activities of material happiness. So you are giving people something that you're entangling them in the material world, and therefore, in the name of religion, You're entangling something that's going to, you're giving them something that's going to keep them further from spiritual life. In the name of religion. So you're cheating them, basically. So this is very strong criticism. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment, rather than teaching them how to get their material desires and increase their material desires, what should you do due to, if they have material attachment? They should be shown the way of transcendental realization by your goodness. How? What to do if not to teach them the methods of going to enjoying heaven delights in a religious way? What is the cure that will simultaneously break their material attachments and bring them out of the material world to Golok? It is through the descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada explains in his purport. Out of many thousands of transcendentally realized persons, only a few can understand the theological science specifically dealing with God as a person. Manushyanam sahasrechu kastidyatati sadanam. Srila Vyasadeva is... Vyasadeva is himself a personality expert in this science, and he is unattached to material enjoyment. Therefore, he is the right person to describe it. And Sukadeva Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is the right person to receive it. Srimad Bhagavatam is the topmost theological science, and therefore it can react on the layman as medicinal doses. And this is how the Bhagavatam is put together, that in a very, very much in the form of doses depending upon one's condition. Because it contains the transcendental activities of the Lord, there is no difference between the Lord and the literature. The literature is the factual literary incarnation of the Lord. So the layman can hear the narration of the activities of the Lord. Thereby they are able to associate with the Lord and thus gradually become purified from material diseases. The expert devotee also can discover novel ways and means to convert the non-devotees in terms of particular time and circumstances. Devotional service is dynamic activities. And the expert devotee can find out competent means to inject it into the dull brains of the materialistic population. Such transcendental activities of the devotees for the service of the Lord can bring a new order of life to the foolish society of materialistic men. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his subsequent followers exhibited expert dexterity in this connection. By following the same method, one can bring the materialistic men of this age of quarrel into order for peaceful life and transcendental realization. And what is that method? That they people should be given the medicine of hearing the pastimes of the Lord, not how to enjoy life. By hearing directly about Krishna, one can and will live peacefully. The enjoyment will be there, but the disease will be cut. So then, what happens if one doesn't engage in material activities any longer, but takes up the devotional service of the Lord? And what happens, just like is asked in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, if one doesn't succeed, does that mean that one won't get the spiritual benefit and also one won't even enjoy materially? So this question in 17 through 19, the benefit of taking up the spiritual path, even if one doesn't succeed fully, is given. And on the other hand, the uselessness of taking up the material path is also given. So in 17, one who is forsaken. So what we've heard so far is that basically what we've heard is that Vyasadeva, his fault was that in the other Vedic literatures, he has not directly discussed and revealed Krishna's pastimes, even though he is qualified to do so. Rather, he has given people prescriptions, material prescriptions, with the hope that they'll be gradually elevated, but the result will be that people's minds become so entangled in the materialism that they won't care for the necessary prohibitions and restrictions of true religious life. So therefore, all the processes can be done at once by the direct glorification of Krishna. So now into what happens if one takes up this path, but there's a loss if one doesn't complete it, one doesn't gain his material things. So therefore, Narada continues saying, one who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage. Yet, there is no danger of his being unsuccessful because he has grasped something transcendental. What is the verse in the Bhagavad Gita? Alpyasya. That even a little gain is eternally one's own. And it is just a matter of time. Well, that spiritual impetus, when planted in the heart, will push one again back, even if one has left. And this will be described even further later. And so many examples are actually given. So for a devotee, he can't be unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything, because he gains pain, and they're transient. And whatever he has gained, it will be lost, stolen by the crushingness of time. Whatever we gain, whether it is health, wealth, or anything, it must be crushed by time on the material level. But whatever we gain on the spiritual level is eternally, forever ours. And it will impel us. It will impel us to go further and further till we are fully successful and are engaging in loving service at Krishna's lotus feet. So many examples of this in the purport. There's the example of Bharat Maharaj. Even though he gave up the wonderful material situation of being the king for spiritual life, and then he fell down, and even though he became an animal in his next life, so quickly after that, he attained full success. He was so serious after that as Jadabharat. And Chittaketu, he made some mistake. Actually, it wasn't even a mistake, by saying something to Lord Shiva that Parvati cursed him for. And in his next life, he became a demon. But yet, that despite that horrible birth, he still was the most exalted devotee and recognized as such as Indradev, so much so that it was actually Krishna who pulled him back to Godhead. And Ajamil, trained as a young Brahmin boy in spiritual life, and then got himself into the most wicked mess. But at the end of his life, in an indirect way, he was just calling out his son named Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And the lords, the dutas, the messengers came, saved him from from a horrible, because he was so sinful. So there is actually, if one moves forward in spiritual life, Narada is saying, there is no loss. This is the most high vision for the preacher. And Prabhupada always carried this vision, and sometimes it is difficult for us to maintain this vision of how much people are actually lost in illusion, and on the other hand, how much are they benefited just by hearing the holy names, even though it can be Hela or Parihas, joking, neglect. Oh, they say, here's the Hare Krishnas. I hate Hare Krishna or something. Prabhupada once said, saying Hare Krishna is bad, saying Hare Krishna is bad is good. Because at least they're saying Hare Krishna. It's good for them. So there's so many instances of this. So Narada is saying, you've given them so many indirect things, but because you have not touched the direct thing, there is no actual gain for them. And then a very famous verse, Tasyaiva hetu prayate tako vido nalabhyate yad brahmatam upayada talabhyate dukavaranyatta sukam kalena savatra kabira ramasa. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet of Brahmaloka down to the lowest planet of Patalaloka. We all are looking for things in this world, but we should not endeavor for the temporary. Don't try to entice people into the temporary. People rather should only look to the eternal to get those things which are not available at all in the material world. As far as happiness, because we all want happiness and we all want to avoid distress, as far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries even though we do not desire. So misery comes of its own. No one goes to the store and purchases misery, but yet no one can avoid getting it anyway. So similarly, as misery comes of its own accord, similarly happiness comes of its own accord. Therefore, we should not, this is the instructions, we should not endeavor for material happiness. Rather, we should use this very valuable time to get that thing which will bring us to the spiritual success, eternal benefit, and not get entangled in that which is available from Brahmaloka down to the Patalaloka. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes may fall down somehow or another, and Prabhupada explains how someone falls down somehow or another, and you know what it is, it's a bad association. This is the cause of fall down, a satsanga tyag, a Vaishnava char. So even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, fruit of workers. Because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So even if a devotee leaves, falls down, has difficulty, he is not the same as a non-devotee. So therefore he's encouraging Srila Vyasadeva to be bold and present directly Krishna's glories, because whatever a reader will gain from that, he will gain that forever. And even if he takes up Krishna consciousness and drops away, there's no loss, it's eternal his gain. And not only that, he's never considered the same as a non-devotee. Prabhupada explains in his purport, a kami suffers the results of his own fruit of reactions, whereas a devotee is reformed by chastisement directed by the Lord himself. The sufferings of an orphan and the sufferings of a beloved child of a king are not one and the same. An orphan is really poor because he has no one to take care of him. But a beloved son of a rich man, although he appears to be on the same level as the orphan, is always under the vigilance of his capable father. A devotee of the Lord, due to wrong association, sometimes imitates the fruit of workers. The fruit of workers want to lord it over the material world. Similarly, a neophyte devotee foolishly thinks of accumulating some material power in exchange for devotional service. Such foolish devotees are sometimes put into difficulty by the Lord himself. As a special favor, he may remove all material paraphernalia. By such action, the bewildered devotee is forsaken by all friends and relatives. And so he comes to his senses again by the mercy of the Lord and is set right to execute his devotional service. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that such fallen devotees are given a chance to take birth in a family of highly qualified brahmanas or in a rich mercantile family. A devotee in such a position is not as fortunate as one who is chastised by the Lord and put into a position seemingly of helplessness. The devotee who becomes helpless by the will of the Lord is more fortunate than those who are born in good families. The fallen devotee born in a good family may forget the lotus feet of the Lord because they are less fortunate. But the devotee who is put into a forlorn condition is more fortunate because he swiftly returns to the lotus feet of the Lord, thinking himself helpless all around. Pure devotional service is so spiritually relishable that a devotee becomes automatically uninterested in material enjoyment. That is the sign of perfection in progressive devotional service. A pure devotee continuously remembers the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna and does not forget him, even for a moment, not even in exchange for all the opulences of the three worlds. So, in that section, we heard why the direct glories of the Lord should be presented. Because the potency of devotional service and the benefit of devotional service is so great, and only it is a gain. And even if one takes it up and leaves, one only has gained. And if one has gained in material activities, one has gained nothing. Last three verses, Narada gives some further instructions and says, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is himself this cosmos. He is everything. There is nothing separate from the Lord. But yet, he is aloof, different from everything, from the cosmos. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In him it rests, and unto him it enters after annihilation. So he is the source, the Lord is the source, the maintainer, and the destroyer of everything that we see. Nothing is separate from him, yet he is aloof. Your good self, Srila Vyasadeva, knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis, because he wants Srila Vyasadeva to explain how there is nothing in this world that is separate from Krishna. Why does he want him to explain that? Your goodness has perfect vision. You yourself can know the Supersoul, Personality of Godhead, because you are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. Although you are birthless, you have appeared on this earth for the well-being of all people. Please, therefore, describe the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Sri Krishna more vividly. I have given you a brief synopsis how Krishna is everywhere and everything and still aloof. You take that and expand it. And for the people of the world, for their benefit, because they are trapped in so much suffering, you give them this transcendental knowledge of the pastimes of the Lord and show them that there is nothing separate from Krishna. And you are qualified to do this because this is really the purpose of your appearance. You are a plenary portion of the Lord. You're actually the Lord himself. So therefore you can do this in a wonderful way. Because right now, he's explaining, Narada is explaining that there's nothing not connected to the Lord. But the trouble is that the living entities, their consciousness is disconnected from the Lord. In other words, they are forgetting Krishna. And that is the only problem. So you teach them by describing how Krishna is non-different from anything, but yet aloof. You teach them how they can use everything in Krishna's service. They are the only thing that's disconnected from the Lord. And they're not really disconnected, but disconnected in their own minds. So what we have to do is connect them to that, the material world, showing them the material world is Krishna. What you have done previously is show them how to enjoy the material world in a pious way. No. Rather, we should show them that this material world is Krishna's. It's connected to Krishna. And you are also connected to Krishna. So you connect yourself in the material world to Krishna by hearing the direct glories of the Lord. So Prabhupada, this one line practically sums up this. The fallen and forgotten souls are detached from the transcendental loving service of the Lord. And the last verse, text 22. Learned circles have positively concluded that the infallible purpose of the advancement of knowledge, namely austerity, study of the Vedas, sacrifice, chanting of hymns and charity, all this culminates in the transcendental descriptions of the Lord, who is defined in choice poetry. So here in this verse, he's saying that the perfection of all the activities that you have given in all the other Vedic literatures culminates when Krishna is described. And Prabhupada, in his purport, very, very powerfully teaches us that the perfection of everything only becomes perfect and truly becomes perfect, or expertise in anything and everything reaches its perfection when it is offered to Krishna and brought up to that level. Here is Prabhupada's very powerful purport. When advancement of knowledge is applied in the service of the Lord, the whole process becomes absolute. The personality of Godhead and his transcendental name, fame, glory, etc. are all none different from him. Therefore, all the sages and devotees of the Lord have recommended that the subject matter of art, science, philosophy, physics, chemistry, psychology, and all other branches of knowledge should be wholly and solely applied in the service of the Lord. Art, literature, poetry, painting, etc. may be used in glorifying the Lord. The fiction writers, poets, and celebrated literateurs are generally engaged in writing of sensuous subjects. But if they turn towards the service of the Lord, they can describe the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. Valmiki was a great poet. And similarly, Vyasadeva is a great writer. And both of them have absolutely engaged themselves in delineating the transcendental activities of the Lord. And by doing so, have become immortal. Similarly, science and philosophy should also be applied in the service of the Lord. There is no use presenting dry speculative theories for sense gratification. Philosophy and science should be engaged to establish the glory of the Lord. Advanced people are eager to understand the absolute truth through the medium of science, and therefore a great scientist should endeavor to prove the existence of the Lord on a scientific basis. Similarly, philosophical speculations should be utilized to establish the supreme truth as sentient and all-powerful. Similarly, all the other branches of knowledge should always be engaged in the service of the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, also the same is affirmed. All knowledge not engaged in the service of the Lord is but nescience. Real utilization of advanced knowledge is to establish the glories of the Lord, and that is the real import. Scientific knowledge engaged in the service of the Lord and all similar activities are factually harikirtan, or glorification of the Lord. So Prabhupada, even when he wrote this, this was before his International Society for Krishna Consciousness was begun, but yet we can see that the concept of using everything within the material world in the service of Krishna was deeply ingrained. In fact, this concept came from Srila Rupa Goswami. He taught how to spiritualize the material world. So this is called nishkam karma, basically. That whatever you are, whatever you do, yat karosi rachnasi, yat jahosi dadati yat, yat tapasyasi kantiya, tat karusva. Madarpanam. Madarpanam means you offer whatever you are, whatever you do, you offer it to me with devotion. Then everything becomes used in the glorification of Krishna. It becomes Harikirtan. So that is the message of this section of the Bhagavatam. He told, Narada told Vyas, the fault was that you described things separately from the Lord, and now we've come in the complete cycle to what He wants through the direct glorification of the Lord. Everything should be used to directly glorify Him. Nothing separate. Everything direct glorification of Krishna. And that, with nothing separate from the Lord, is what Vyasadeva will realize and compile into the Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Dharma Projita Kaitava Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam Paramo. That all the cheating religion means religion that is incomplete, where something is not directly connected to the Lord, is not presented in the Bhagavatam. And everything is connected. How Krishna is everywhere and everything, plus how He cares for His devotees, plus and ultimately in the scheduled medicinal doses, ultimately the wonderful, most glorious pastimes of Krishna and Sri Vrindavan. So that also will come. Okay, thank you. We'll continue. These instructions are they're thick. Thick. But wonderful. Very important instructions for us to progress in Krishna consciousness. Any questions or comments? Very beginning and the end. Did you ever read the last verse of the Bhagavatam? Is there a 12th canto?
Nama sankirtanam yasya sarva papa pranasanam pranamo dukasam manas tam namami harim param.
The congregational chanting. Nama Sankirtanam Yasya. The congregational chanting of the Lord's holy names destroys all sinful reactions, and the offering of obeisances unto the Lord relieves all material suffering. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Hari. The verse before that.
Bhave bhave yata bhakti padayos tavajayate tata karusvadevesha natastam no yata pravo.
O Lord of Lords, O Master, please grant us pure devotional service at your lotus feet, life after life. Sense objects, because they have a beginning and end, that pleasure. But all religions, they're not, all religions aren't sense gratification. But misapplied religions turn into that, for sure. At those three verses, 20, 21, and 22 together, and seeing how 20 shows how nothing is separate from the Lord. And he tells them that in just synopsis, and so much of the Bhagavatam, second canto, third canto, 11th canto, this is expanded greatly by Srila Vyasadeva. And then in 21, what I was saying, so was that he says, you yourself can know the Supersoul, the personality of Godhead. So the Supersoul is that feature of the Lord by which he is expanded everywhere. So you can know that. So please describe the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead more vividly. More vividly means in an expanded way, more clearly. So that Lord has two dealings. We can divide them in two. Of course, we can divide them in other ways. But we can divide them in two. One is his dealings with the material world, and one is his dealings in the spiritual world. So he wants him to describe, and both of them are transcendental. So you please describe that. So the leaning in from the text 20 is more in relationship with the material world. And in 22, it describes that that all the different Vedic pieties, so to speak, all the charity, shutasya, the study of the Vedas, the spiritual education, knowledge, all these different things that have been described in the Vedas, which previously you have described without any relationship to Krishna, now you should describe all of that, but with relationship to his glories. Because there is nothing separate from his glories. So that's what's in 20. There's nothing separate from him. So now you should describe everything that the Vedas were describing in one sense, which is the advancement of knowledge, because the Vedas lead to knowledge, and Prabhupada takes it as